"All I'm saying," said the Gryphon puppet as a crowd of onlookers laughed, "is that investing in education is something everyone should be able to agree on."
The Manticore puppet continued its attempt to eviscerate the Gryphon with its stinger.
"You're looking to dump money into an education system that has proven time and again to be corrupt when the Republic should be increasing its internal and external security." "Anyone worried about the Republic should be worried about our children showing little aptitude for mathematics and crystal work," the Gryphon yelled back, while clinging to the Manticore's stinger and raking savagely with its back claws. "While over in the Empire, their own educational program is working wonders."
"Does anyone else remember that one week where the politicians weren't at each other's throats?" Tern asked, idly munching on an apple covered with chocolate and small nuts.
"No," said Locke. "When did that happen?" She looked toward the edge of town, as she'd been doing for most of the afternoon, but Kale continued to not be there.
"It was while you were dead."
Desidora took a bite of some kind of flaky cheese pastry and made a face.
"Ah," said Locke. "That explains it."
They had spent the last several hours in the little nothing town of Hillview, which, as far as Locke could tell, had come into existence primarily because this was about as far as a merchant who left Rossoniki with a good two-horse wagon would go, before insisting upon a bed and a decent meal. Hillview was full of farmers, mostly white, but with a few Urajar families there as well, along with small restaurants and inns that promised free crystal charging stations to anyone who paid for the night. The roads were dirt, and the hill, and whatever view it purportedly offered, were lost to the ages. But the town had a carver house, and the Urajar in the streets didn't tense up when white people walked by. In Locke's view, that was enough for a town to be all right.
"I am still uncertain that revealing yourself to the allies of the ancients was necessary," said Icy,
who held a carrot like a cigar between two fingers and nibbled it occasionally.
"We slunk in the shadows," Ululenia said.
She also had a carrot, which she took a bite of and then frowned.
"It accomplished nothing."
"I am not sure nothing is really fair," Tern said.
Ululenia patted her shoulder fondly.
"Now, my dear, we will nip at their heels, wait for them to spin and buck in terror, and then sink our fangs into their hamstrings."
"You are absolutely certain you're not evil now, Ululenia?" Icy asked.
"Because that seemed like something an evil unicorn would say,"
Tern added, and took a bite of what turned out to be the half-eaten carrot in her hand.
"Consuming the essence of another fairy creature has not made me evil," Ululenia said, as she'd said for the past several months repeatedly. "It has simply allowed me to become more in touch with my own needs."
She took a bite of the chocolate and nut-covered apple that she now held.
"You evil horse, give me back my damn apple. I have been eating crappy Forge of the Ancients food for weeks on this job, and if I wanted a damn carrot, I would have gotten a damn carrot."
"My sorrow is a slow-flowing river, choked with weeds of guilt," Ululenia said, and took another bite.
Locke scanned the crowd. It was full of farmers and merchants, and still held good numbers, even as the puppet show had wound down into the usual hijinks and yelling. The Republic and the Empire had almost gone to war again a few months ago, and ever since then, people had paid a lot more attention to things, even in little towns like Hillview. "Let's move to the Carver House."
"Locke, can you make her give me back my apple?"
"But your apple now has evil unicorn spit on it," Ululenia protested.
In her human form, she was a pale woman with ash-blonde hair and a simple white peasant dress. Once it had made her look innocent. Now it slid along her curves in a way that made people wonder what it might look like slithering down into a pile on the ground.
"You wouldn't want to drink in my evil unicorn spit and become evil, would you?"
Locke turned to Ululenia.
"Play nice or find a virgin. Come on."
The dragon puppet finally pulled the Gryphon and Manticore apart.
"Should Archvoyant Servant focus more on educating our future or protecting our present? Remember, it's your republic."
"Stay informed," the crowd shouted back.
And with the show over, the farmers and merchants began to go back to their lives.
"You are concerned for Kale,"
Icy said, falling into step beside Locke as they made their way across the packed dirt of the town square toward the Carver house. He's a good scout. He'll be fine. Locke didn't look toward the edge of town again. Cale was indeed a good scout and wouldn't come into town through the main road anyway.
It had to be him, Desidora added.
Yep.
The hunters could detect Ululenia, even if she took the form of something small, Desidora added again.
Mm-hmm.
And my own death magic and Hessler's illusions might well alert whatever airship comes to investigate the destruction of the forge, Desidora continued to add.
You've convinced me, Locke said, and Desidora sighed.
You are concerned for Cale, Icy said to Desidora.
Seriously, Tern said to Ululenia. We are going to talk about you stealing that apple. That was the last one they had, and do you have any idea what it's like to want something sweet and beautiful, and then see someone else get it instead? I mean, aside from Mr. Dragon making off with Derry.
I am very happy for them, Ululenia said crisply.
Because, by all rights, you had that virgin locked down, Tern went on.
Very happy for them.
You really want to goad the possibly evil unicorn? Desidora asked Tern. Or is this like when you kept taking jabs at me because you didn't like me being a death priestess?
This is like she ate my chocolate apple, Tern said. And I think you need to pick a side here. Are you a death priestess right now or a love priestess?
I can pretty much go both ways now, Desidora said.
Tern glad.
Well, that at least sounds like something a love priestess would say.
Hessler, still looking like a collection of broomsticks someone had shoved into a wizard's robe, came out of the Carver house with a tray full of waxed paper carbs.
Oh, is the show over already? I had some questions about whether the Carver beans were purchased from some place that pursued ethical trading practices, and they had to get the manager to.
He broke off and looked at Tern.
You got a carrot instead of one of those chocolate apples. Good on you for taking care of yourself.
Well, I thought I'd eat a little healthier.
Tern took a cup overflowing with whipped cream, with Carver presumably somewhere far underneath. Ululenia smiled broadly and took another bite of the apple. Locke grabbed her own Carver, which was simple and black. We're going to wait inside.
Is there still no sign of Cale?
Hessler asked, frowning and squinting in a way that was subtly different from his normal expression of perpetual frowning and squinting.
Assuming that an airship came from the nearest port city upon detecting the destruction of the forge.
We're not worried, Locke cut in.
Cale is going to be fine, Desidora said.
She has an itemized list justifying the current course of action, Icy added.
I'd love to hear it, said Cale,
coming around the corner of the Carver house.
We knew you'd be okay, Desidora said, and her face darkened ever so slightly.
On most people, it would have been a blush. On Desidora, it meant that her death priestess aura was slipping back into the shadows where it belonged, lowering the chances of anything nearby spontaneously taking on a silver skulls and gargoyles decorative theme, or getting the life sucked out of it. She stepped forward gracefully and didn't quite kiss Cale, but did put herself beside him with her arms touching.
How'd it go?
Locke asked, moving into the space between the Carver house and the bakery next door. It didn't have enough garbage lying in it to be a proper alley, so by Hillview standards, it was likely a road.
Good news and bad.
Cale looked over his shoulder.
The bad news involves pursuit, Icy guessed.
Boy, does it, and you're all drinking those on the go, Cale said.
Locke took a sip of her Carver, inhaling the heat of the dark roast.
Good news is I got the tracking crystal onto their fancy-ass airship. Assuming it works, we'll know where they're going.
Desidora went slightly pale, her hair darkening from auburn to black.
It works. I can sense it now.
Good. Now running, Cale said. Trackers, professionals, an ogre, and two things I couldn't place. I think they were going by scent, but it could be by aura, or it could be both. I don't know what two of them are, so until we learn how to lose them, we're going to want some distance. Arika, Yorichi, and Gilspower were both there too. Bertram was carrying them. They've got him enslaved.
You're certain? Hessler asked. If Bertram believed that,
He's certain, Desidora cut in, giving Hessler a look, and Hessler blinked and nodded. Nice work. Locke took one more sip of her kava, then sighed and tossed it into a garbage bin near the back of the alley. Waste of damn good kava. And ethically traded, Hessler added. Then they were running for the sad little field where they'd left the airship, ready to flee yet another town just ahead of whomever was after them. But this time, Locke thought with a tiny little grin, they had a target. Fangs into the hamstring, little one, Ulilenia said in her mind, and Locke laughed. Things were actually looking up for once. A year ago, Derry had been working on the farm, cared for, if not precisely loved, by good, honest people, with no further thought than next year's harvest, and a little annoyance at the silly birthmark on his arm that the farm's old woman said was special and he should never show anyone. Ever since the night blood gargoyles had come stalking around the farm, life had been one educational experience after another. Now, with the prophecy, some morally ambiguous military service, and several major robberies behind him, Derry was finally happy, living with a man who loved him for who he was. But of course, the Champion of Dawn wouldn't get a normal life. The Champion of Dawn had to do heroic things. At the moment, those things involved leaving the man he loved and running off to the Empire. Derry knew that Mr. Dragon wouldn't have asked if it weren't important. Mr. Dragon hadn't seemed any happier than Derry himself. Princess Veiled Lightning could keep him safe, Mr. Dragon insisted, and far enough away that nobody with any ideas could hurt Derry. Derry had asked whether that meant Mr. Dragon's own estate in the middle of the Elflands wasn't safe enough, and had then felt sorry for doing so, because Mr. Dragon had sighed and hung his head, which he knew from when Mr. Kale and Mr. Hessler did it, meant that the answer was that Mr. Dragon wanted it to be safe enough, but it wasn't, and Mr. Dragon was feeling sad about how life had turned out to make that the answer. Now, under the moonlight, Derry looked down from the great tree ship he had just boarded and waved down at Mr. Dragon, who watched from the ground below. Mr. Dragon waved back. He was smiling, but his face was still sad. The elven captain was named Thelenia. She had been the captain on the massive tree ship Locke and Derry had boarded back when Locke had been trying to steal the elven book from Mr. Dragon. She clapped Derry on the shoulder.
This is the fastest ship in the Elflands. You'll be safe in the Empire in less than a day, Lord Ribandaris.
Derry almost said, Please, just call me Derry, but then remembered that elves hated it when he told them to do anything, so instead he just said, Thank you. I appreciate that. Captain Thelenia looked a little like Captain Locke, especially when she smiled, even though her skin was green instead of brown. Derry wondered if it was something about being a captain.
He is trying to keep you safe.
I would rather be with him, Derry said, and then looked away, because the words had come out bitter.
I believe he knows that as well, Captain Thelenia said, and stepped back. This ship only has one floor and a few cabins, unlike the last tree ship you travelled upon. Whenever you are ready, someone will be happy to show you to your room.
Thank you, Derry said again, and the captain headed off to the bridge. Derry watched the great golden radiance of Mr. Dragon's estate fade in the night as the tree ship slowly ascended. In what seemed like moments, the great thick trees that covered most of the Elflands had obscured the estate from view, and then the night was lit only by the silver-white moon and by the purple and blue glows of moss on the trees. The railing of the tree ship was rough, the bark gripping his fingers. Overhead and behind him, branches rustled and creaked as countless intertwining leaves caught the wind, while the main hull beneath his feet was strong but faintly springy. It reminded Derry of when he had climbed the young trees back on the farms, feeling the green wood flex beneath him. When he had ridden on the great tree ship with Captain Locke, it had seemed almost like a normal airship, but with moss and leaves and no crystals. Derry hadn't realized at the time how much of that had been for the comfort of the humans visiting the Elflands. This was a real elven ship, though, as alive as the elves themselves, and as different. Derry decided that he liked it. He was getting used to being different. He would find some way to help, even from the Empire,
He hadn't been able to help Mr. Dragon with the raiding, and he hadn't been able to help Locke and the others with stealing things. But he would find something he could do. Whether he liked it or not, he was a child of prophecy, he noted with a little smile. He was bound to be important somehow. He turned to find someone to take him to his room, and that was when the bag came down over his head.